Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 137, I chat with technologist Robert Herron about calibrating Leo's televisions. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded November 19th, 2012. Episode 137, Calibrating Leo's TVs. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here on a special episode of Home Theater Geeks, live from the TWiT Brickhouse Studio in Petaluma. My first time doing the show in the studio, and I'm very happy to be here. My guest geek this week is none other than Robert Herron, a technologist, home theater specialist, bon vivant, and man about town. Hey,
awesome.
Robert.
Hey, thank you for inviting me.
I'm so happy to have you here. You know, you and I have talked at trade shows about how, you know, your readers and listeners, my readers and listeners have said, you know, you guys got to get together.
Totally. We have similar interests, and every trade show, pretty much, as far as home theater goes, you and I are both at these same events.
So exactly right.
We've known each other a while, and it's long overdue.
So I'm really glad for you to be here, and one of many times, I'm sure.
Awesome.
Now, you just got back from Texas. You got to tell us a little bit about that.
The brand new Circuit of the Americas track. F1 came back to America.
F1 is?
Formula One racing. The epitome of car racing in the world. If all race car drivers dream to be F1 drivers, because they drive the fastest cars, the most technology you can pack into a vehicle, the most money spent on racing. But bringing that back to America, it is just incredible to watch. It was a beautiful facility. The people were awesome. The coverage was really good, including lots of HD screens. Usually, the outdoor LED.
Right, the Jumbotron type
of
thing.
Exactly. But lots of those well-produced, lots of helicopter cameras for getting the high-speed shots. And just, if there's one thing I can say about Texas I didn't realize is Southern hospitality. I know the employees at the track were all told probably to be extra courteous, but everywhere I went, everyone is downright sweet in that state. It was just a great experience. And I had a Mustang, 2013 Ford Mustang, that I got to drive, like, starting before the sun comes up, and I was driving it till after the sun went down, and that car was so damn fast. And I got to say, not really a technology-related thing, but the motor in that car was impressive. And there were too many officers just parked everywhere trying to get speeding tickets on everyone. I also had a chance to hit the new 80 mile-an-hour speed limit.
I was going to say, Texas has got, like, one of the fastest speed limits in the country now, right?
That was crazy.
Oh, man.
But good times.
So you're obviously a motorsports guy, but really why you're here, of course, is because you're a home theater guy as well.
Indeed.
And you've been doing that for a long time. You were, in fact, on Tech TV for a while, I think.
Totally. ZDTV that became Tech TV, and that's where I got my start in home theater with their test lab. I was one of the lab rats, and through Jim Lauterbach when he started the lab there, and we were doing consumer electronics testing, lots of different products. It gave me a chance to, you know, get a taste for every category of products. And eventually when the lab switched over to doing home theater, that's really kind of, the light went on. It's like, you know what? I really like dealing with this because it was some new stuff I didn't know about. Things like what is the technology behind creating that image and what are the standards that go into the pictures that are produced?
Right.
And that kind of stuff is like, wow, this is a much bigger world than I ever thought. And these are much more complicated devices than I ever thought. And that newness of it all just dragged me right in. And it gave me a chance too to look at some, at the time, very expensive display technology, like $17,000 to $20,000 plasma screens at 42 inches.
Right,
the crazy days, and everything burned in immediately if you did anything for longer than 5 seconds on the screen.
Right. You get a permanent burn in.
We had a lot of very, very expensive plasmas with permanent logos and screen bugs and things like that burned on.
But I remember those days when the early days of plasma, the 42 inches at $10,000 and $15,000.
Yep,
Fujitsu and
endless and. And that environment, and that got me into the home theater side, and then it's just continued since. And the last corporation I worked for was PC Magazine, running their HDTV test lab in San Francisco before they shut down their West Coast facilities and moved everything back east. But
publishing, you know?
I've been through enough layoffs. You get used to it, believe it or not.
You know, I do. I believe you completely because I've been through a bunch of them myself.
You become self-sufficient and pretty resilient after a few of them. So yeah, the first one's always tough, though. I understand.
So now you've got your own website, heronfidelity.com.
Yeah, courtesy of Roger Chang, if I could just throw that out there. He actually came up with a URL for that. And,
oh, that's great.
It stuck.
It stuck, yeah.
And it's a good place just to I put articles and usually stuff related to home theater. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good clearinghouse for things I can't normally cover elsewhere.
Right,
so,
right.
As most websites.
And then you have also a podcast on Revision 3.
Totally. That group, great to work with them. We do Techzilla is one of the two shows we do, and HD Nation, more of a strictly home theater show as well.
Right, right. And you do a bunch of reviews there, so.
Totally. We get a steady stream of products in, and lately I've been covering everything from soundbars to the new flat panels trickling out. Some of the larger screens are finally starting to show up here as we're getting into the holiday season. And,
right.
And I think everything's out now for 2012. I don't think I'm waiting on it, except for the non-existent OLED displays.
OLED. I was going to ask you, have you gotten one yet? No one else has.
Neither, yeah, exactly. Nobody has, although there have been some great demonstrations. Actually, sure. It was LG introduced theirs for the first time at Monaco, the Monaco race for F1.
Right.
So they had.
Were you there?
No, I will one day. That kind of street racing looks awesome. But next year, actually, I keep talking about F1, but next year they're going to be in New Jersey.
So you could go there. Wouldn't be too bad.
It would be pretty cool. But anyway, well, get my head out of motorsports. But
OLED, of course, is the big story of 2012, or the big non-story, should we say?
I made up for it by buying a Samsung Galaxy S3 that has the OLED screen.
Ah, very good. Okay. All right. Now, LG and Samsung still have, what, a month and a half or a little less to... They said they were going to be out by the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we'll see if we can make liars out of
it. I bet you they'll get a handful out to select buyers at the most premium prices possible.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be $8,000-$10,000 for sure for a 55-inch.
Probably. And it probably will go 50% above that on that. If there's only a handful available, there's going to be a bidding war over them. Or the vendors will be like, I'll give these to my clients who will cough up for it.
Right.
But hopefully that will just get the flood out for next year early. I'm sure at CES it's going to be even more of a circus-like atmosphere around OLED.
Right.
And 4K.
I was going to ask. That was my next question. 4K, of course, I think is going to be probably even a bigger circus because we've already seen four companies at least. It's announced that they're going to make them.
I think technically it's not that difficult for the LCD manufacturers to simply increase resolution, especially on a larger screen size.
Sure.
When it's 60 inches and above.
Right.
I haven't seen
especially when it's twice the resolution horizontally and vertically. It's, you know, it's not exactly 4K. It's 38.
True.
3860, I guess.
Yeah, 3896?
I think it's 3860 right. by, or 3840 by 2160.
Da-da-da.
So four times. You have four 1080p displays sitting there.
I did have the chance to preview Sony's 4K, new 4K TV that they put out. It's interesting that three of the companies so far that have announced 4K screens, they're all announcing TVs that are exactly the same size and same resolution.
All coming from LG.
I was going to say. Yeah. It has to be. And there was... Samsung announced their 4K screen, I believe, and it was like 1 inch bigger. So it's probably their own custom manufacturing, but they made sure to just bump it up.
Some. Ours is better. It's 1 inch bigger.
It's okay.
Now, my big question, the big thing that I always think about with 4K is, okay, you got four times the resolution of HD, but what about 4K native content?
Yeah.
There's not going to be any for a long time, I don't think.
No. Streaming services, of course. YouTube has select videos available in 4K if you have bandwidth to pull them.
But that's the key. You have to have the bandwidth. And I'm sure they're they compress the you-know-what out.
Totally. And they're like a minute 30 long. They're not like full-length movies or anything like that.
Right.
But that kind of delivery will continue. And
you think 4K will ultimately be delivered more by online than by physical media?
I think that's the way everything will go. Blu-ray is going to have to step up at some point and improve, go beyond 8-bit color and go beyond 1080p resolution.
Right.
And if I had my wish list, I'd also add anamorphic video support or format support as well. So you're not creating black bars in the video stream as you're encoding it to the disc.
Right.
Which is just a waste of space.
Total waste of pixels.
Exactly.
Exactly right. So I agree with you. Blu-ray's got to step it up. But a Blu-ray spec for 4K, that's going to take all the companies involved in the Blu-ray Disc Association, it's going to take them a couple of years at least to hammer that out. Yeah. And then the studios.
Yeah.
How likely are they going to be to release 4K content?
It would be another premium offering in how they love... Well, you take, like, I don't know if Disney's really bad at this, but they re-release content that's been improved. They go through their library, or there's anniversary releases for things like that. If there's an excuse they can come up with, I hate to say excuse, but a reason they can come up with to re-release content with better audio, better sound, or
better
especially
picture.
For things they've also already scanned at 8K or 4K,
right?
It's there already, and maybe you've done the James Bond movies. All of them, I believe, are all scanned at least 4K. They've all been restored.
Right.
I would love to see that. And in projection systems, were you down at Panasonic Hollywood Labs for their demonstration?
Mm-hmm.
That on their 4K Christie projector that they could split diagonally and do the 4K original with the Blu-ray encode.
Yes.
And see if you can spot a difference.
Yep.
It was really hard to see a difference between those encodes.
Even on a big screen like that.
On a 30-foot wide screen
where
the pixels were the size of dimes. And
right.
that was an amazing projector, though, for a lab environment.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Were you at Cedia?
No, I didn't make the trip back east this year.
I
miss
did.
It being in Denver.
Next year it's in Denver.
Is it?
Yeah.
I will probably be there.
Can't wait to go to Denver. I love Denver. But at Cedia this year, Sim2 had a 4K projector, which is essentially a rebadged Christie.
Really?
Yeah, for like, I don't know, $150,000, $180,000.
Okay. But
it's a digital cinema projector for the ultra wealthy.
But still, to be able to. That's always the intro price for all of it.
Yeah.
When they first had the first 10K projectors, or even the first 720p projectors, were a solid five figures on up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So nowadays, those are probably entry level for $500. But but 4K is going to be a big deal, I think, for any large format display. And I'm hoping for the TVs, they will offer additional functionality like quad screens, where you could do maybe your apps in one corner, a couple of channels.
Or for the football fan, four different games on all at the same time.
Do some better stuff with tuners. Add a few more tuners. Those are relatively cheap. Why they don't do this? Why am I limited to picture-in-picture with only specific inputs? Oh, I can only use the TV's built-in tuner and one HDMI input.
Right. I got a question about this over the weekend. I was subbing for Leo on The Tech Guy, and somebody called in and said, what happened to tuner and picture-in-picture?
It's still there.
I was looking for a TV. And I said, well, yeah, it's still there, but they just don't do two tuners anymore.
Exactly.
Because they expect people to get their content from satellite or cable or whatever.
I'm trying to think. The company that does the HDMI verification.
HDMI licensing?
Licensing. I think it's digital or... they do the port certification that companies like Samsung and others will say, verify the ports, make sure they're fit to the spec so when people plug in their devices.
Ah, okay.
And they just developed a tech called Instaport where it would do the switching.
That's DVD-O, I believe.
Yeah.
Insta-Preview is what their thing is called.
Yeah, but it's Silicon... Is it Silicon Image?
Silicon Image.
That's
who it
is.
You're exactly right.
And then they also have a new tech that basically will do a thumbnail preview of what's the port's plugged into. So say I've got my Blu-ray player and it's stuck on the menu screen or something. At least the preview would give me a little thumbnail image of that menu screen. So it's more than just text saying input one.
Right.
But if all of those are remaining active, I think you could tie that into then doing like multiple views on the same screen easier.
Right, exactly.
So,
I know DVD-O has this thing called Insta Preview, which does exactly that. Little thumbnails of each input on their six-input switch.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I can't wait to get one of those. I think that's going to be really, really cool.
And for the TVs, thank you very much. Oh, awesome.
Coffee.
I've got to have one sip.
Please do. I remember the version of Holy, 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 that hymn?
Yes.
It's called Coffee, Coffee, Coffee.
Actually, I'm just going to set this right here for a second.
Yeah, sure. Go for it, man.
Oh.
Anyway, speaking of James Bond.
Yes. I haven't seen Skyfall yet, so.
No, I haven't either.
I'm waiting for the Blu-ray.
No, I'm going to go see it in the theater.
I'm definitely going to. We have a handful of theaters here that have the Dolby Atmos, and I haven't
heard
that sound system.
Oh, you haven't yet?
No.
Oh, I heard it. I did with Brave.
Is it?
That was the first one. It's awesome.
Okay.
Now, Brave was...
Might not be the best for that, or...
It wasn't probably the best for that. I think Skyfall or some action flick's going to be really, really good. But, Brave was the first one to come out with Dolby Atmos. And the overheads, for example, there's one scene where it's raining.
Really?
And the rain coming from overhead, that was just great.
It's been a while since I've heard great audio in a theater, short of a We have some private studios here, or private theaters in the Bay Area. Like, Dolby has their own theater in their test lab. That's one of the best I've been in, but not everybody can have access to that.
Right, exactly.
So these handful of theaters that do have that high-quality audio, I want to support them and try to get in there to see
Definitely.
It. As much as I don't like going to the movie theaters, at least I'll do it for that. So.
And The Hobbit is going to be in Dolby Atmos as well.
Excellent. And they are doing that in 48
frames per second. High frame rate. I think it's the first widely commercially available movie in high frame rate.
And apparently some of the digital theaters are already ready to show it at that
they
frame
are.
Rate. So
Christy told me that all of their projectors except Generation 1, the very first generation, are capable of showing high frame rate.
That's awesome.
So
good to know.
3D, high frame rate, Dolby Atmos.
It's going to be a good year for
it. It really is. And then Skyfall, of course. I don't know if they did that in Dolby Atmos. Do you?
I don't.
Yeah.
I really don't. I have to take a look at that.
Anyway, speaking of James Bond,
okay.
I want to tell you that I spent part of this weekend, I came up here to Petaluma to fill in for Leo, as I said, and that was just great. It was wonderful fun.
But you got the full run of the studio, too.
I got the whole run of the studio. That's right.
This awesome facility.
I know. It really is. It's amazing. I'll come up here any chance I get.
And I like the free parking next door.
Yes.
That just rocks, man.
As long as you go up to the second level and get 10 hours.
Awesome. Especially if you're working. You got options.
Exactly. Anyway, I also spent some time calibrating Leo's TVs. He's out of town now, right? He's on this Mac Geek cruise.
Oh, cool.
In Australia. And he saw the total eclipse. And
neat. You
know, oh, man.
And he's been on a boat past the equator.
Exactly.
That's a big deal for a lot of people.
Exactly. Anyway, so he while he's gone, I said, hey, while I'm there, you've got these two TVs, a new Panasonic GT50, 65-inch.
Oh,
very
great.
Nice. And an older Pioneer, the PDP 5070 PU.
Nice.
And that was built in 2006.
That had dynamic black levels. I mean, just really dark, dark black levels.
Well, unfortunately, the Pioneer didn't have that great a black level.
Pre-Curro?
It's pre-Curro.
Ah, okay.
Exactly.
Curro was such a game changer.
Wasn't it, though? Do you have one?
No.
Yeah, I still have the one I reviewed. I bought it.
I have... two friends and one client I know that still have them, and it's I still have this set. Now I want to go just calibrate them for them just to see how it's held up over the years in terms of the ability to hold that flat response and that epic dark level. See if it's bumped up at all.
Right.
I'm sure it has
but mine hasn't.
No.
Certainly over those years.
I almost wonder if that helped preserve it by maintaining that black level as dark as it was. Uh-huh. Maybe it didn't stress the panel as much.
It's an interesting idea.
Something I'd have to
speculation,
ask.
But we'll have to find out. Anyway, among the things I watched on his Panasonic anyway was the new Blu-ray of Goldfinger.
Oh, cool.
Which, you know, looks surprisingly good for a movie that old. You know, they really did a great job, I think, at the restoration.
It is. Do they maintain the same audio, or do they also offer the original maybe mono audio with a stereo upgrade?
That's a good question. I didn't look. I just you know, popped it in and just watched a bit of it.
Because that'll be the thing I'll do this year is upgrade my home theater or my sound system at home. I haven't had a real receiver yet, so now is the year I finally break down and do that. I've been making do with a DVD-O Edge Green for a while just to help make all my other stuff work together.
Well, that Edge is a very nice processor.
I love it. And it's an analog and digital video switcher as well, which just it makes my life easy for the couple of analog devices I still have left. But for that, it's helped me, though. It keeps me from jumping up to an AVR that has all that functionality built into it.
Right. But it keeps you from that really cool sound system, though, too.
Ah, that's true, too. And to be able to decode those lossless audio tracks. That really, for me, is the number one thing about Blu-ray movies that I've come to appreciate is just the good quality video, but that step up in audio, too. They take whatever came before, and they make sure... Well, for most movies, they make sure they have the best quality, and it's usually a lossless format, too. And
right.
It sounds better.
It does.
In
it
every
does.
Way.
Much better than Dolby Digital or even DTS Core, regular DTS.
So going back to Leo's equipment, how was that setting it up? Was it fairly straightforward? Do you have any major issues with any of the displays?
Well, I did.
I find plasmas are more difficult to calibrate than just about any other display.
You think so?
It depends on how you're measuring it and everything, but the what's on the screen can influence the picture so much.
True enough.
Anything from a menu, you've got to understand what that display is doing with anything that's on the screen.
That's right.
And I've run into
situations where... So when you do your measurements, you really don't want the menu on the screen, for example.
And it makes it time-consuming, if nothing else.
Yeah, because you have to jump in and then jump out, jump in and jump out. It was a real problem.
And if you have certain menu systems where it's maybe three or four steps to get to that menu you needed,
right.
And you spend most of your time hammering on a remote than anything else.
Right.
it can be frustrating. And some of the new Panasonic TVs now incorporate a built-in auto calibration feature, which will do the white balance. It'll measure it and internally just say, okay, we either do a 10-point or a 2-point grayscale analysis, and then we'll tweak everything in real time and get it all nice and flat for you. And I had a chance to do that with the VT50. They're premium.
They're high-end, yeah.
That it looked like it worked perfectly.
And yeah?
It
did it measure well?
It created a perfect... almost a perfectly flat response.
Wow.
And what used to, it would probably take me, you know, 90 minutes of tweaking, and then if everything goes right, this was done in probably 10 minutes. And then that really allowed me to then look at more content,
right,
go through all the other numerous settings and spend far more time on that than I did just the grayscale or the white balance itself. And
right,
for that, I really appreciated it. Now
you do that in conjunction with Calman?
Exactly, with the new Calman software.
Which is from SpectraCal, by the way. I've had on Derek Smith a couple times on the podcast.
There isn't really another company that I know of out there that's helping calibrators with effective software like that. It's commercial-grade software. It's not cheap, but they offer support for the variety of devices we're using. And this new version is now, I think, one of the best they've done so far in terms of customization and the ability to make it easier to understand the whole process as well, even for newer users. They're doing more on the, I want to do this, how the heck do I get there? And their previous interfaces, they could be a little confusing if you didn't know exactly where to look for certain things.
Right.
But they've really gone a long way, and they're putting a lot of effort into the software to make it easier for calibrators to use.
They really are. It's true.
But that auto-calibration feature, I could predict one day that you will just have it built into every TV, and it would probably come with a little puck device. You would just stick to the front of it, maybe. Or if they could somehow build that into the frame maybe itself and take a measurement without the need of an external accessory.
Did you ever see the Bang & Olufsen? They had a
I want to say I've heard of that. And
they had a 103-inch, which was the Panasonic plasma. But it had a little camera that swung down out of the top bezel.
Ooh.
And did an autocal.
Really?
Yeah.
That I always wonder why people step up and pay extra for a TV like that when you know what its guts are,
coming from Panasonic,
the masters of plasma.
Right.
Why would you buy anything else but a Panasonic? But if they're adding value like that, where you're going to pay for that, you're going to pay through the nose.
Sure.
But to have that a calibration tool pop out, take the measurement, tweak the TV, and then disappear.
Super cool.
I would be tempted to sell that to someone. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room. And by the way, I have to give a shout out to SoCal Ray, Ray Coronado, who was on call for me this weekend, helping me. I couldn't remember quite how to get into the Panasonic service menu.
I had a spreadsheet with every code I think I've ever had to use, just in case.
Yeah, well, you're very smart to have that. I didn't, and so Ray was very helpful to me. He's a great calibrator in L.A., and I also talked with him about a couple of issues that I had, which we'll get into, but I just wanted to give a shout-out and say thank you so much for helping me this weekend, Ray.
Terrific.
He put a note in the chat room here saying, your calibration is only as good as your meter. And that's true.
Very true.
You know, if you take one of these little puck things, you know, it's a tri-stimulus meter. It's only tuned to one red, green, and blue.
It's using filters, basically. Plastic filters.
Yeah, exactly. And if you put it on a TV that has different red, green, and blue characteristics, it's not going to be very accurate.
Right.
So you need the software to compensate for that, which SpectraCal does pretty well.
Exactly. That's the other thing, too. How a company that does calibration devices ensures that the device they're selling is calibrated, they have an even more expensive machine.
Right.
Usually made by Hewlett-Packard or other high-end scientific devices.
Right.
And something like a source of white light that is so well understood and measured that we can compare these things and then say, okay, with this meter that we're about to sell, we're going to have the super-duper meter create a profile for it and have that programmed on there. And then we know, at least when it left our hands, it was as close to our $30,000 meter as, the $500 meter was.
Right.
However, how long that holds that over time and different display technologies will work or not with that particular sensor. And certain sensors are, ubiquitous. They'll say, you know what, I'm more of a, I'll see the photons pretty much and just count them.
Right.
Those type of sensors tend to be a little more expensive and slow.
Yes.
But very accurate. Whereas when you're doing TV, especially, or when you're doing calibrations with display devices, especially now where we're getting such dark black levels.
Yes.
And to get a good accurate measurement of a dark gray, you need a good quality sensor for that.
That's
otherwise,
correct.
You can eyeball it a little bit at the end. It's like, well, you know what? I can see where it's really getting blue or green or something weird in the dark grays. But you really need a good sensor in order to measure those. And that's where the money starts getting tacked on. The more accuracy you need at the darkest levels.
What do you have for your meter?
Actually, I have an old school Hubble that I profile with a spectrophotometer. So I think it's an i1 Pro.
i1 Pro. That's a good meter.
It's just solid. It's what I've had for a while, and I'm probably going to upgrade that this year as well. I'm looking around for some new meters. But I almost religiously, though, create that profile first with the Y1 Pro and then apply that to the other meter so that I get kind of the best of both worlds. I get the high speed of the thing that's better at low light, mm-hmm. the Hubble in this case,
yeah.
in addition to having it just as accurate as possible between both meters. And you kind of have to do that on a per display basis. But
yeah.
the software makes that pretty easy
pretty
nowadays.
Pretty easy. So. Yeah, it's true. I have a Minolta CS200.
I love that.
Which is a very nice meter. It's pretty fast, a lot faster than the Photo Research.
And that's a list price of around $13,000. So
that's, right.
that's not a cheap device.
No.
And
but I made the investment because, you know, I knew I was going to be doing this for a while. So
that is one of my favorite devices for a few reasons. One, you don't need to do that dark calibration every 10 minutes like one of my meters does.
Right.
So it's got the super accuracy. Konica Minolta makes some of the finest measurement tools
Incredible.
I've ever used. The display manufacturers, to a T, every one of them uses the CS2000.
Right.
Usually,
which is the $23,000 one.
If you really need to measure just a pinpoint of light in an almost pitch black environment,
right.
that meter can do it.
Right.
And
right.
if I could have any meter, I would want that one. But and the facilities I've seen where they're actually using them, they'll put the TV into an automated room in a sense where it's on a platform, and then they'll have a robotic arm with the camera on it go from point to point right on the display, and
they have it fully automated.
And, the Samsung facility, when we had a chance to tour that a couple years ago, did you by chance, we were able to go to Korea to
yeah.
see...
Yeah, I was there.
In 2009.
Yeah.
To see their facility. And
yeah.
in their calibration room, they showed us that real quick.
Right.
Just say, how do we test our own TVs? We actually have CS2000
yeah.
on this beautiful robotic arm and blah, 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 but...
SoCal Ray Jr. says the SpectraCal uses the CS2000 as well.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, SoCal Ray Jr. also says, plus the CS200 runs on batteries, which I never use. I always plug it in because I want to make sure that it's got consistent power.
I'm also paranoid about battery use in any expensive electronics, too. If you forget about the batteries and they start leaking or corrosion.
Yeah.
I always tell people with remote controls, it's like, hey, if you're getting a universal remote, before you go stashing all your old remotes, just pop all the batteries out real quick because there's nothing worse than you open the drawer and it's got the stuff, the growth.
Oh, man.
Whatever that white, looks like almost mold or corrosion that just starts blooming.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
can just destroy an electronic device, especially if the batteries. And to a T, if you leave any set of batteries in a remote for more than, say, 6 months after it's dead,
right.
they tend to start doing that.
Right. Right, right. Totally agree.
Terrible.
Anyway, let's take a look at the calibration that I did on Leo's Panasonic.
Oh, love to see
GT,
this.
GT50. It's the TC-P65 GT50.
Nice.
Second down from the top level, the VT50. It doesn't have the AutoCal, but...
Not at all?
I don't think so. Not the SpectraCal AutoCal.
So I wanted to say that the ST had only two steps. It would only do...
Well, then the GT might have had it. And
but then
I
they gave 10-step... calibration to the VT,
uh-huh.
and I wondered where the GT fell
you know
into
what?
That. And
I may be wrong. It may have the two-step. I bet you it's two-step if it's anything. And if the ST has it, then the GT's
like,
got to have
two
it.
Two, I don't really mind so much. It's like, oh, that's pretty quick to do.
Yeah.
But the 10, when you're doing all 10 and the reiterative
takes
nature
forever.
Of... Yeah.
By the way, those of you who might not understand all of this, a two-step or two-point calibration, you take a look at the white, the way this display produces white, and you measure its white characteristics at 30% full and 80% full. So those are the 2 points.
Yeah, like a dark gray,
dark gray and
a brighter, almost a full white.
Almost full white, but not quite. And then you adjust the levels of red, green, and blue at those 2 points, and then that hopefully gets everything flat.
Yeah, you're almost like pinching the ends, and hopefully the middle follows along.
Exactly. Never the case. A 10-point calibration lets you get a lot closer by calibrating the red, green, and blue at 10% of full white, 20%, 30%, 40%, all the way up to 100%. So you have 10 points, much more accurate, much more, you get a much better result generally, but it takes forever.
It's something I dread to engage in
yeah.
a manual mode.
Yeah.
Because they usually always tell you first, do the standard 2-point, or just the standard your cuts and gain, or gains and your bias.
Yeah, 2 points.
Do that first, and then go mess with the 10-point if you need to just barely tweak stuff.
Tweak stuff.
So.
You know, I would have liked to have a 10-point in this case, because let's take a look. If John can put up the... here's... Okay, let's see. Is this the Panasonic?
Yes.
Okay, this is the
cool.
Panasonic pre-calibration.
There we go.
And it was... Leo took my advice and set the TV in movie mode.
You can tell by that graph, too. You can see the blues are down slightly across
right.
the RGB balance. That's the white balance measurement.
That
right
is the
there.
White balance measurement. We can see it's a little blue deficient.
Yep.
which is typical of the movie mode and the color temperature setting of warm.
Gotcha.
Which is what the movie mode would give us. But you can see that it's a little blue deficient. You can also see in the color gamut, the gamut CIE, that the color points are pretty spot on.
Not bad. Especially yellow. I love a good yellow.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's got to be in that box.
Exactly right. Now, Ray Coronado clued me into this. He said, because I was going to do the white balance from the user menu, and he said, no, really the best thing to do is to select the THX Cinema mode and go into the service menu. Ooh, and do it from there.
Nice.
So that's what I did, and that's what he helped me with.
And does that then allow you to reset the user menus to defaults then, but then your preset, it basically then becomes the new default?
Yes.
Oh, see, that's ideal, because you're locking it down then.
Right.
So you don't get that call later in the week going, you know what, I hit this one button accidentally, and I reset everything on my TV.
Right.
Did you write down everything? And
right.
You're hoping they did.
Right.
Which you should be writing down settings, or at least taking pictures of the screens. Which I do quite a bit when I'm working, especially if it's a TV I've never worked on before.
Yeah.
I just set up my camera and
just take some pictures.
Yeah, or you could take, you know, there's so many numbers and stuff and configurations on new TVs nowadays. I find it just easier to snap pictures of the screens.
So many. The menus and the number of parameters are so many. SoCal Ray Jr. says that the GT30 does not have AutoCal.
Oh, interesting.
So if the ST does.
I'm almost certain it does.
It's pretty weird that the GT wouldn't have it.
Yeah. That's. I hope I'm right about that, because I know the VT has the 10-point, and that's selling point.
That's the selling point. Yeah.
And it's all in. So I bet you next year though they'll probably put 10-point in all of their sets. Similar to give Panasonic a lot of credit for creating plasma displays this year. Mm-hmm. I believe the ST, the GT, and the VT are all using very similar panels. I'm sure they cherry picked the best for the VTs, but
Right. Overall,
most folks aren't going to see a big difference between
any of those.
And you're getting great value in like the STs and the GTs. And
absolutely.
I've encouraged a lot of people who are upgrading this year to go for a bigger screen, get it wall-mounted, and consider plasma. If I have my choice, if I can't go projection,
right,
I then go plasma.
Right.
And then, reluctantly, I'll go toward the LCDs.
Right.
And
You and I are totally in alignment here. Totally in alignment.
It's just, especially when it comes to just consistent viewing angles.
Yep.
Picture performance. And for whatever reason, too, I find that maybe it's the auto gain nature of a plasma, where if it suddenly displays something like a full screen white, it can't really do that. So it's got to gain itself down. Otherwise, it has like a certain electrical energy envelope it can operate in.
Right.
So that TV, while it has no problem, it takes very little energy for it to display black.
Right.
When it goes to display full screen white, it can't never do it.
It doesn't blast you out of your seat.
And so it almost, like if you're watching a traditional show, it'll almost keep it from getting out of control as far as how it affects your eyes. And it kind of smooths out harshness in video.
That's a very good point.
That I really like.
About that. Virgil in the chat room is asking, what's the biggest Panasonic plasma? I would say it's the 152.
Yep.
Which you have to build a house around, basically.
Exactly. They had a special mount for it, and I think it took a 1,500-watt 30-amp circuit.
Yes.
You had to have a 30-watt circuit, and it took over...
A 30-amp.
A 30-amp, excuse me.
Yeah. Oof. 30 watts, it takes a lot more than 30 watts.
When it gets to be that big, though, I don't see... I'm like, why aren't you doing projection at that
exactly.
point?
Like, exactly. Well, let's take a look again at the PDF of my results. Scroll down a little bit. You see that the gamma was very nice,
you know,
at 2.3.
Not bad for a default movie mode.
Luminances
were good, too.
The gamut luminances, this tells us, the gray bars tell us what the brightness or amount of light coming out of each color should be.
Yep.
And here it is, and the colored bars are what actually was measured. And so it came out pretty good.
And the interesting thing about that gamut luminance, why isn't red, blue, cyan, magenta, yellow, why isn't that all at the same level?
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with how video is encoded and
right.
our own sensitivities to particular wavelengths of light. Component video is compression, and it's biologically based compression. And it's one of the more interesting things. I mean, everyone says, component video, the red, blue, green cable or whatever. But there's so much cool stuff going on there. And to maintain lossless picture quality, yet eliminate a lot of the color information most of it.
Most of it.
so we can make smaller files.
Right, and exactly. On Blu-ray.
Totally.
Most of the color information is gone.
Every kind of commercial video we deal with, be it Blu-ray or broadcast, is component video.
Right.
And we wouldn't have technologies like DVD or Blu-ray without that kind of biologically based compression.
Right.
Because color information is everything. Right. It's a huge fire hose of data is what
well,
it
true,
is.
Well, true. But our eyes are so much more sensitive to black and white.
Totally.
Than to color.
Always.
Which is why they can compress out most of the color information and it still looks good to our eye.
I love it.
Yeah. So also we wanted to take a look at the color temperature ahead of time. Here we have it, the color temperature. The average was 6,100. Makes sense. It was a little red.
A little warm, definitely.
A little warm in the warm color temperature. But overall, not bad. Okay, so let's scroll down to... So here we go, the post-calibration snapshot.
Much better.
So we see that the RGB balance, which is the white, the gray scale, I typically call it, or white balance, is much better. Although at the low end, it still gets a little wonky.
A little fluctuation.
But that's partly because I think the CS200 doesn't do very well at 10 and 0. You know, I mean...
That's tough.
It's only $13,000.
And it's still one of my favorite meters in the realm of affordability.
Of semi-affordability. Yeah, exactly right. So we can't really trust the 10% and the 0 particularly.
And you could do that. You know, you could do, why aren't you measuring it 0, 1, 2, 3? And it's like, when you get down to super dark levels. Also, you have the influence of the backlight systems for LCDs. But in the case of plasma, it's usually not.
Exactly. We can see the gamut still looks really good. That didn't move very much. There is a CMS, at least they say there is, in that TV, but I couldn't find the actual controls. It was just CMS on or off. I think it was some sort of automatic thing, and I just kept it off.
That can go either way, I find. Either the controls don't do a damn thing. Like, I will say the newer Sharp TVs are much better, but... Historically, Sharp has always had this incredible CMS control menu.
Yes.
That you start there messing with it, it doesn't seem to really do anything to anything.
Right.
And I was just like, what is all... You got this beautiful menu that I can really move colors around on these nice screens, but I'm not seeing it actually change the picture much. But on their latest designs that I've had a chance to look at, they've actually made that seem to work now. And I've been really happy to see that.
That's good.
They're getting back to the point of being... some of the best LCDs on the market.
Really?
Because they went through that phase where I bought, a D62U back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And that was really probably the last decent TV they made for a good chunk of time.
Well, that was a while ago.
That was. And I just thought that they were the kings of the world. They were the first with 1080p screens.
Right.
And nobody else had them. And nobody else had the sizes they had. And then they just kind of sat on it for too long, I thought.
Yeah.
Everyone caught up with a rush.
And then some, and passed them.
And then it became a technology race, and how much can you put into R&D? And when Samsung announces a few years ago, it's like, we've got $7 billion we're going to throw into R&D. And I'm like, okay, you're going to be all right for a few years. And I'm like, catch that.
right, exactly. Let's keep taking a look here. Scrolling down, we got a gamma luminance of 2.28, so essentially 2.3. 2.2 is the target, and it's what I like myself. Some people like a little higher gamut. And by the way, those of you who don't know, the gamma basically describes how the TV comes out of black.
Totally.
Right? So you display something black, it's black, or as black as that TV can do. Then as the brightness gets lighter and lighter and lighter coming in the signal, the TV starts producing more and more and more light.
Exactly.
And it follows this curve.
It's not linear is the thing to know.
It
matches our own eye's function. We don't see an increase in brightness on a linear scale. We see it actually ramp up. At the darkest end, it's actually almost flat as far as it goes, just from like 0 to 10. And then it actually enjoys that curve.
Right, it's an exponential curve.
So it's important to maintain that gamma because that's actually encoded. The video is encoded to that gamma level.
Right.
And if the TV's not reproducing that correctly, you end up with either scenes that are blown out looking or
washed out.
Or dark detail missing.
Right.
And it's part of the calibration process is to get that right.
Correct. And some people like 2.5, for example, which makes darks look darker, but it crushes low light detail, in my opinion.
And there are other specs for video as well, like DCI, the Digital Cinema Initiative, where they specify, I think it's 2.4 or 2.5.
I think it's 2.4.
And that, you know, if you just said, I'm going to apply the DCI spec to my Blu-ray movie, it's not going to look right. So that's the other thing I'm hoping with technologies like Media Director from THX,
mm-hmm.
that if it can look at the content, there's only two movies out right now that have this built into it, and I don't know of any receivers and TVs that are available in the U.S.
There
that
are
take
some.
They're coming.
I think Onkyo might have it. I don't remember
but
now.
But Media Director adds a little bit of metadata that says, right. If this is played with compatible equipment, the TV should be in this mode. The video and audio processing should be in this mode.
Right.
And it takes care of a lot of that setup for people automatically.
Exactly, which is a great thing from THX.
And I have the Star Wars box set. That was the first, I think, released movie.
It was.
And then
Red
Tails.
Yes.
The fighter pilot movie.
Yes, which I saw in the theaters. It was a pretty good movie.
Cool.
I thought it looked really good, in fact, too. I haven't seen the Blu-ray yet. But
awesome.
Yeah.
But
So let's take a look again at, we scroll down a little bit here, and we'll see that the color temperature now got much closer to 6,500, where it needs to be. And the gamma luminance,
those look solid,
pretty good, except that yellow got a little light, a little lower than it should be. And there wasn't any way really that I could find to fix that.
See, ideally you would have a yellow brightness control.
Exactly.
Or a yellow luminance control and be able just to tune that up without it affecting anything else. But it's very rare to come across any TV. That'd be the perfect TV.
Right.
These are commodity devices.
And selling on razor-thin margins.
Oh, without it. There is no profit on theater TVs.
Right. There's no profit.
Oh.
Okay, let's keep going here. We'll scroll down a little bit more, and we'll see pre-calibration. Oh, that's just a better view of the RGB balance. Pre-calibration, we see blue is low. Post-calibration, we see much closer.
Yep.
Ideally, you want all of those bars to be exactly at 100.
Totally.
And with two-point calibration, you can't. It's rare to get them all exactly.
Exactly. That was one thing the Krill kind of surprised me of. They must have done a factory calibration, because the few I measured, they were ridiculously flat.
Yeah, ruler flat.
And I was like, ooh, I love it when a factory does something like that. You knew they were doing something like that.
Now, I will say that the pre-calibration on this was in the THX cinema mode.
Okay.
And I don't know about you, but I've found that THX mode, for those TVs that are THX certified, they have a THX picture mode. And if you pick that, it's supposed to be close to these standards that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it usually gets, 80-90% of the way there. But
it's up
you
to the implementation by the manufacturer.
Right.
At least according to THX on
this.
So,
right.
And I have seen they have now a THX day and night mode or presets almost for Brightroom, I think they call it.
The THX Brightroom there is on the GT50.
I'm glad they have that because I'd like people to use those modes, especially if they're in the ballpark. But most folks aren't going to use the movie mode during the day. Or they're not going to set that mode and then manipulate the brightness or the luminance of the display to get it to where it needs to be.
Just go to a THX Brightroom mode.
That would be ideal. And
no, calibrate his Brightroom mode, just THX Cinema. He just goes to just select Brightroom for that and then go back to THX Cinema at night. It'll be fine.
Because your eye also has less sense. You're less able to perceive fine color and brightness detail in a really bright environment.
In ambient light, right?
Yeah, so it's not as important in those environments. But man, if you're a movie lover, making sure the TV's not blasting light in your face so your pupils can expand, you become dark adjusted, you perceive contrast better when your eyes have a chance to dark adjust properly too.
Right.
So you'll see dark detail better.
Right.
I was on a flight last night.
Yeah.
I'm being criticized by the flight attendant and the person next to me for not using a reading light. If another person tells me this will somehow affect your vision, I will lose it. It has nothing to do with that. As long as you allow, like, say, 20, 30 minutes for your eyes to adjust, suddenly everything will come to light.
We'll be fine,
so to speak. But I got into an argument with the person. Not an argument, but
heated
discussion for a minute.
Heated discussion.
It's like, oh, my sister's an eye doctor. I'm going to go talk to her. I'm like, please do. quit telling me that. I can't read in the dark.
Okay, so we've looked at the RGB balance. Let's continue down here. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Leo should come out very nice.
Yeah, Leo should be very happy. Here's the gamma luminance. We've already seen this, 2.3, 2.28. And this is kind of interesting. These are the gamma points for all the different colors, red, green, blue, and white.
Yeah.
And they should all be at 2.2. Now, this is pre-calibration, and you'll notice that the blue starts inching way, way up at the high end of the brightness scale. If we look at the post-calibration, I'm happy to say, everything's much nicer.
Interesting.
Much closer to, now at 70, it still is a little higher, but, it's certainly well within a better range.
Panasonic, with the couple generations of TVs now, they've been switching to a new phosphor formula to improve how fast the decay is. Once it's pulsed and it blasts light, it then decays out to zero again.
Right.
And they do this 600 hertz or whatever.
Right.
But in particular for Blue, the reason that, well, one of the reasons that Panasonic TVs used to emphasize, why did they go with Avatar as their,
That's their demo piece?
Why did they spend so much money to acquire that, and they had the distribution rights forever?
That's right. And they shipped it with their TVs?
Because their TVs could also deal with Blue faster, and it was the best-case scenario for demonstrating that TV. and I thought that was damn clever, to be honest with you.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, look, we need a really Blue movie.
A really Blue movie.
And ever since then, I was just like, oh, it's just fascinating.
Wow. I hadn't known that. That's pretty cool.
To what they do in the back end, to everything that's presented, there's reasons for
it all.
Nothing is just serendipity in that industry.
Yep. Ken Crayley in the chat room is saying Red Tails and Star Wars films both look great on Blu-ray, as well as Indiana Jones.
You know, I still have that fourth Indiana Jones movie on Blu-ray, and I've had it since it was released, and I never did watch it.
No, don't!
The Crystal Skull or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I did watch the South Park episode that made fun of it, though.
And, oh, yeah?
Was it good? That's not family material.
No.
It was so
This is
funny.
A family show.
It was so funny. I will...
Let's see if we have anything else. I'm not sure we have anything else to look at on this. Let's just scroll down real quick and see. Color temperatures we looked at already. They were a bit low.
Oh, another thing about color temperature real quick. Just realize that it's not describing color.
And this is a point I wanted to make as well. It's not
telling you a specific color at all. It's showing that the measurements, what is 6500K actually resides along a line that could vary.
It could be from magenta to green.
Exactly. And so don't ever look at color temperature and say, oh, it hit 6500.
It's on
the money.
Yeah.
You have to look at the red, blue, green values to make sure that it's hitting the correct point.
And that's a great point, and it's a reason why I spend less time worrying about color temperature.
It's misinformation. That's like you look at real quick to make sure, okay, everything I did, it's still in the ballpark.
In the ballpark.
Because I know that I already checked the red, blue, green and saw where it plotted on the CIE chart.
Right.
That beautiful XY coordinate of the colors within the system we're using.
Exactly. Totally. Okay, so I think we're done with this. Let's just double check if we scroll down even farther, or are we at the end?
Oh, the Bond 50 Blu-ray. You know, I like the very first James Bond movie. Which one?
Dr. No, I think, was the first one.
That was intense. I didn't realize what kind of a... There's that scene, basically, where James Bond takes out one of his enemies, and it was a hardcore fight scene, and I was like... For the year that came out and everything, it wasn't. I hate to use the word, but it wasn't really candy ass. It was pretty intense, man. I was like, you know, I didn't realize that because some of them get kind of campy and stuff later on.
Right.
The Roger Moores and the
right.
I love those movies too.
They were great.
But that first one was like, whoa, yeah. Sean Connery.
I think Goldfinger was second.
It wasn't Sean Connery in the first one. It was.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, was he?
Yeah,
was
yeah,
the
yeah.
first one? Okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Cool Breeze asks in the chat room, because human vision is perceptual. Subjective, I would say.
Color is in your brain. There isn't such thing as color.
Exactly. Are TVs ever calibrated for a client's eyes?
Yeah, that would be tough.
It would be tough. Ideally, you'd want to get some sort of measurement of the client's perceptive capabilities, similar to an audiogram. And I've been trying to figure out if there is such a test. I mean, you can go in and get an audiogram, and you can get your hearing profile of which frequencies are here or there.
I need to have that done.
Yeah.
I'd like to know.
It's a good thing for a baseline. You might not want to know, but it's a good thing to have.
I'd like to know where do I need help.
Exactly.
Same reason I get my eyes tested once a year, just so I know, to make sure that when I'm dealing with a client who can see better than I can, I got to make sure I'm seeing at least as well.
Right, but I'm not sure you get, at the end of an eye exam, you don't get a graph like you do from a hearing test.
Not at all.
I think it would be really great.
It's more
if
or less,
you did.
Can you see detail or not?
Now, iPhone Kiki in the chat room is saying, yesterday I was saying that showing actual content on Leo's TV via the PS3, which is his Blu-ray player on the TV, didn't look good. What was wrong? Well, I didn't actually say that. I didn't say it didn't look good. What I said was it had very different characteristics than the test pattern generator. So when I did the calibration, I used the VideoForge,
right? Nice.
Which is from, I got it from SpectraCal. They actually loaned me one for this job. So I was, thank you, SpectraCal, for loaning me the VideoForge. It's a test pattern generator.
It's a great little box.
Great little box.
Did it have the Joe Kane upgrade on it with
It didn't.
With the 3D patterns?
No. I didn't have time to go over to Joe's place. Joe's great, and he will gladly put his patterns, his 3D patterns, on my little SD card, and I'll stick it in the Video Forge. But I didn't have that for this case, and I didn't calibrate the 3D mode either because I know Leo doesn't like 3D.
Aww.
He doesn't like it. He doesn't enjoy it.
You have to explore the content that's out there because some of it's not so hot, but some of it's darn impressive.
And
even the apps and stuff, at least on Samsung's side, mm-hmm. although I wish the apps environments would all change a little bit, but they offer some good 3D content that's out there. And all the new 3D movies are looking pretty damn good.
Oh boy, I got to tell you, I saw a preview screening of Rise of the Guardians. And I had the director Peter Ramsey on the show, on the radio show. And man... That movie looks fantastic in 3D. Beautiful. I mean, beautiful animation. Great use of 3D. I mean, it wasn't like 3D stuck out and went, I'm in 3D, you know? It was really, really effective. Well made.
And some of the other techs that 3D technology could take advantage of, like providing dual view. Two viewing environments off the same screen or two distinct separate views.
Sure. Well, this is great for gaming, you know, where you and I are sitting here looking at this screen. I see one image, you see a different image, depending on, you know, what each of us is doing. It's really great.
And compare that to, like, if you've ever split-screen game with someone. There are all sorts of funny hacks you've seen people do, like put a piece of cardboard taped across the TV.
Right.
And so then one person plays with a blanket over their head looking at that half of the screen. And it's like...
Much, much nicer.
It's cute, but, yeah, at the same time. Having that kind of tech, and what Samsung had demonstrated at CES was having the Bluetooth 3D active technology, but having speakers built into the glasses, so each person had their own audio as well.
Well, that's pretty cool.
So you could do two different things. You could be watching, say, TV and a movie, mm-hmm. and having two things going on at once that were totally distinct.
Of course, in that case, though, you're only getting half resolution.
True. So. No, you were getting full resolution on there because it's the active...
Because it was active glasses.
And it was just switching fast enough.
There you go.
However, Samsung, the active pioneers, have just introduced, or they've announced at least, their 4K TV with glasses. I want to take that back. Was it Samsung? Somebody just announced the 4K. I want to say it was Samsung.
I think it was Samsung. I agree. But I have to tell you that to me is one of the most immediate applications of 4K.
Indeed.
Is passive glasses 3D, which lets more light get to your eyes. Lighter and cheaper. And you see full 1920 by 1080 in each eye, even though you're only seeing half.
Totally.
Vertical resolution.
It makes up for that one complaint we had or have about passive technology
Correct.
In general. And otherwise... The other advantages of the brightness you mentioned.
Right.
And the inexpensive glasses, although now active glasses are had for under $20 a pair. But that's still, you compare that, you get like a pack of five for $20
of the passive ones.
And for people like me who wear glasses, there are no active glass options available for us. So we're always stuck with two pairs on.
Right.
Unless you wear contacts, which I don't. But,
right. And the passive ones can be bigger and you can fit over your glasses or you can do clip-ons.
Clip-ons I love.
Yeah, I do too.
It's super nerd. It's like,
I know.
Flip up. I'm ready.
Anyway, let me get back to the story here. So I calibrated with the Video Forge test pattern generator. And... I was able to crank the contrast up to 100, and it didn't clip whites. Ooh. And I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. Panasonic's, I've never really experienced that before. Generally, the contrast control, it controls the white level, essentially, how much light is being put out at full amplitude, if you will.
Generally, yeah,
and,
exactly.
At some point, brightness, black to white is... It represented in 8 bits, right? So it's 0 to 255 are the values. In video, black is defined as 16. So there are some areas below black, we call it. And 235 is defined as white. So there are some areas above white. Now, when you calibrate a TV, you want to set the black level, which is the brightness control. That was always odd to me. The brightness control sets the black level. Okay.
Terrible naming conventions.
Weird. Okay.
That we're stuck with all these years later.
Anyway, you want to set that so that you can see everything from 17 up.
Exactly.
And below, and 16 and below is really your floor.
Yep. Shouldn't see anything there.
Right. But, interestingly enough, you might think, well, you want to set the white level to 235 and not see anything above that. Not true, because there actually happens to be information above white in a lot of content.
That's cool. I noticed it a lot in cloud or detail.
Correct.
Bright shades of white.
Yeah, exactly. Snow scenes.
There you go. And if you do this on a normal TV, if you turn up the contrast level too high, you'll just see it all kind of blur into one blob.
It's one flat white blob.
Rather than distinct detail within a bright white scene.
Right.
And white shirt would be good. If you've got a white shirt with buttons, you might not, if you turn it up too high, the wrinkles would go away, the buttons disappear.
Right. The classic scene, the classic example of that is The Fifth Element. In the hotel or the floating palace, you know, where the diva sings, the waiters are in white
Flustin
jackets.
Flustin' Paradise.
Flustin' Paradise. Yes, exactly right.
I love that movie.
And so one of the Mangalores is dressed as a Ruby Rod.
Oh.
You know, he's dressed, he looks like a black guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's in the white jacket, dinner jacket.
Serving.
Service jacket. And that is a perfect example. It's got some above white in
it. Exactly. That's a great sequence, actually.
Exactly. So,
and it's a fun movie.
And it's a great movie. So I was able to push the contrast all the way to max and still see off the test generator above white.
Right.
Then I went to the PS3 and I put in Spears and Munsell high definition benchmark.
Love
great
it.
Disc, test disc.
Best navigation menu of any disc I've ever used.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And what should I see? But all above white, totally blown out. Totally blown out. Going, whoa, that's weird. And by the way, before I did that, I measured the white level, and it was like 30 foot Lamberts.
My head is just spinning, thinking of what are the three or four things that you had to deal with? And I think I know the answer to this.
So, you know, I turned down the contrast from the PS3 while watching the PS3 until I saw above white, all the above white, and I measured like 15 foot Lamberts, half as much.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, you have to take what your source device is going to be and use that more than the test pattern generator. The test generator is calibrated. It's, you know, it's to a reference standard. It should be good.
I had a very expensive source device one time that historically it was the black level was never set right, or they do RGB output when most consumer devices were expecting component video input.
Correct.
And the difference between those could confuse some devices.
That's
so.
Right.
The black level was never right, and then when you put your other content on, it just didn't look right.
Right.
In the case of the PS3, there's actually a super white setting that you have to tweak as
right,
well.
Right.
And that will influence whether or not peak white detail will be displayed or
exactly
not.
Exactly right. And Ray Coronado was helping me with that as well. He said, I've got this list of PS3 parameters you should really set, right?
Yeah.
So we went down the list and we set them all up.
Because that remains still my favorite Blu-ray player. Just because
really? More than the Oppo?
It's been out longer,
yeah.
And even if you have that first generation, if it's still working, that first generation PS3, that has been supported over time for every new feature, including 3D.
True enough.
The only thing the old ones won't do that the new slim models will do is native support for the lossless audio formats.
Right, the bit streaming of DTS HD and Dolby True HD.
Exactly, which are awesome.
They are. Yeah.
But the old one will do output conversion to lossless PCM audio anyway. So you weren't really screwed, but it's nice to have support for the original.
So what
format.
I ended up doing was I ended up bumping the contrast and clipping some of the above white, not all of it, but some of it, and I got the peak white up to 20 foot Lamberts, which is pretty good.
But there was really that big of a difference
was
between
really
the
that big
source
of a difference.
Device.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
These source devices aren't cheap, and we depend on them so much.
I know, Like, so I need to look into this a little
you
more.
You need another Blu-ray player, too, just to back up.
But yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have other equipment to verify off of. But
anyway, so the peak white I got to 20-foot Lamberts, the black level, 0.003, which is very good.
Yeah.
The Pioneer Curo is 0.001.
Yeah.
The lower you can get that to be, the better. So, but the Panasonic was great. We have a few minutes left. I want to show you what happened to the Pioneer.
Oh, please do.
The Pioneer, this was the PDP 5070 PU, not HD.
Right.
But PU. It's not even 1080p. I don't know what the resolution is. I couldn't find the manual.
1024 by 768.
Something like that.
The old rectangular pixels.
Exactly.
Is that still around? I hope not.
I hope not, too. Anyway, it didn't even have any calibration, you know, white balance calibration controls in the user menu. I went so far as to go online and download the service menu manual because I thought maybe it would give me access to the service menu and I might be able to do it from there. But most of that manual was about how to replace this board and that component. And I went, I'm not going to open this thing up.
And we get that question, too, a lot about why aren't the factories calibrating these TVs before they leave?
Good question. Some, I get it all the time.
Some do.
Yep.
And it's usually going to be a premium device. And I've seen the TVs being calibrated before they go in the box in certain companies.
Right.
And however, and that's great. And you're going to get a good, solid, you know, movie mode, or they're always going to optimize their default modes to just be crazy bright.
Crazy bright, because they don't know which one's going to get pulled out at the store and put on the showroom floor.
And also, when you turn on a TV for the first time nowadays, because of Energy Star and other requirements, you're going to get a menu that'll ask you, hey, are you using this at home, or is this the store mode? Because that will determine the initial setup that...
Exactly.
If you go with the store mode, you're going to blow... The thing's going to be consuming all the power it can to make the brightest, craziest looking screen possible.
Right.
Not that image quality, though. Not at all.
No, not at all.
And you're going to be sacrificing... And people love it. People who love Vivid mode can get used to a calibrated mode. It just takes a little time.
At first, they say, oh, this is so dim and it's so red, you know? Just give it some time, please.
Yes.
And you will find a much more comfortable, pleasant picture that is more accurately reflecting what the content creator intended.
Exactly. Now, daytime viewing and...
is another story.
Go ahead and crank it up. You'll have a mode for that. You can always... If you need the brightness, you do. But at night, treat yourself and enjoy it as it was produced. And to... when it's set up right, too, you will start picking details out of things that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
Even with older content I find on HD. The first thing I did when I got an HD TV was hook a DVD player, an upscaling DVD player to it, or any DVD player, and just start looking at all your old content, and you realize, you know what, my old tube TV wasn't even really showing me everything that format had.
That's right.
And that's what I'm really hoping 4K is going to do as well. You're going to have a display that's effectively four times the resolution of the Blu-ray content.
Right.
So now we can really start nitpicking our Blu-rays to say, you know what, this release was meh. or they really did. The reason labs like Panasonic Hollywood Labs has a 30-foot 4K screen is so that when they author Blu-ray movies, they
can see everything.
Yeah. They want to know what's going to happen. They want to make sure that their transfers look dynamite.
Right.
And
it's equivalent to having studio monitors in a recording studio that reveal every little detail of the music. So let's just take a quick look. All I could do really was change a couple things. It was in warm mode. Leo had done the right thing and gone to warm mode. But look how much red there is. That's seriously warm.
Boom. And you can even see the primaries exaggerated out a little bit, too. When the points start expanding beyond the triangle, that's essentially cranking the saturation levels up.
Exactly. Now, look at this gamut CIE. For people watching the video, I should say, all of those primary and secondary points, well, the magenta's on the line, but the cyan, the yellow, and the green, and the red, even, are all outside of their squares, which is where they should be, and they're all outside rather than inside that triangle, which means that they're oversaturated.
Totally. Now, it would be nice if we had a standard that allowed us a bigger triangle.
Yes.
But no video made ever for our TVs
will go outside that triangle.
Yes, the spec says stay in that triangle.
Now, deep color goes outside that triangle, but there's nothing made for it.
And
so
I want to say the Digital Cine, DCI, will also expand upon that, I think, to 1.8 times what that is as well.
Right.
It'd be great. And those are all future-looking standards that, you know,
that aren't here yet.
Yeah, but we've got the resolution now. I think 4K will be the next good standard to stick to for quite a while.
Yep.
Well, maybe 8K one day. Who knows? But
who knows?
But that and expanding color and getting us beyond that 8-bit of levels, even though internally in the TVs they're doing much more than that. And
exactly. But they have to in order to get the math right.
And to make it easier for people to use with the... I keep mentioning THX as Media Director, but they worked on that for a long time. And I hope that something like that takes off.
Oh, I totally support it as well. Okay, another quick look here. This is a pre... Ooh. The gamma was fine, 2.2... moving on down, we won't even worry about color temperature. Gamma luminance, not too bad. Green was a little low. Cyan was a little low. And then we move into the post-calibration. And all I did was I had to choose between warm or low color temperature setting and mid color temperature setting. And
that one just looks more consistent.
This is the mid, and it looks more consistent, and that's what I chose.
There's less variation.
Correct.
And that I would appreciate more than just something that got the number,
the color temperature.
The color temperature number.
Right.
Closer to 65.
So the color temperature number, scroll down a little bit, upwards rather, the other way.
What are these?
A little bit further.
Next one up.
There you go. See, we got the color temperatures are all under 6,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for zero, which we can't trust.
No.
But now we scroll upwards or downwards or whatever there,
yeah,
and we see they're a little bit above 65, but, you know, it's more consistent.
Without knowing anything else, you'd say that'd be a little bit bluish, but
right.
That I think, is the variation is less compared to
correct.
The other mode.
Correct. And if we just slam through the rest of this real quick, because I know we're kind of running out of time.
Oh.
Here's just a bigger view of the pre-calibration and the post-calibration. That's the low color temperature versus the mid-color temperature. I decided on the mid-color temperature.
Because you can see the red, blue, and the green are all closer to the 100% point.
Correct. Here they're all way off. Here the red and green are much closer. And then you got a little more blue than you should, but okay.
And on TVs you don't have a lot of control over, these are the compromises you have to make.
Exactly.
And you were able to figure out what the best settings were by using your tools.
Right.
And that's
exactly
the key. That's what we're doing.
That's exactly right. And it's what I wanted to demonstrate to people today, to show them what kind of data do we gather as we calibrate.
Totally.
I don't think there may be nothing much else to look at here, but let's just scroll down real quick. Gamma was fine, 2.2 both ways. Here we have the gamma of the different colors, and blue, again, rises pre-calibration.
You know,
post-calibration, it's much nicer. Blue kind of falls off at the high end.
Usually that was something I associate, when the blue increases towards 100, that's something you often see with LCDs because of the backlight system. At least the
right.
older backlight, the fluorescent backlight
right,
systems,
right, right.
tend to be blue heavy.
Yeah.
They are very bluish lights.
Right.
And that gets manipulated, and as you crank it up, even in the dark point sometimes, blue would increase in dark as well because the backlight would be bleeding through a little bit, and then it's never pitch black, so you're measuring extra blue.
Right. So here we have the color temperature again. It's very low in the low color temperature mode and a little bit high in the mid, but I decided that looked better. Moving along here, pre-calibration, those points. There wasn't much I could do about those color points.
No.
If I brought down the...
That tells you about that TV.
Exactly.
And then you would compare that to the results you'd get from other TVs to say, you know what, who's doing better out of the box or who's giving me better controls.
Right.
That's how you make those judgment calls. And you got to look at real-world content, too, all these graphs aside.
Also. And what I tried to do here was I tried to lower the color control, which is the color saturation,
yep.
which would have brought those colors back in, but it screwed up so many other things.
That's the balance.
That I decided, you know what, better to leave it where it was.
Awesome.
So.
And also the first thing I end up having to find on all TVs, too, is where's the reset command? Where can I get
right.
is there a reset control? Factory resets? Because who knows what was done to it before I got there.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, this Pioneer also, I think I got a white level of something like 25, which is pretty reasonable. 29.3, actually. But a black level of 0.027. So that's pretty high
nice.
As things go.
That's one thing I don't, at least I haven't been paying attention to marketing of HDTVs, but I'm not hearing those crazy contrast ratio claims as much. Is it still out there?
It is.
Okay, because
sure.
either I'm ignoring it effectively now,
yes,
or...
and you've been ignoring it for so long, you
don't
even see it anymore.
I don't bother talking about contrast ratio.
It's still
ratios.
There. They're talking about millions to one contrast ratio.
It's all such nonsense.
It is nonsense, because the manufacturers measure these things in dark rooms under... totally unrealistic conditions.
I would like to know the black level. That would be a nice number to
see,
know. It's like how black is black?
Exactly.
But as far as brightness goes...
they all get bright enough.
They can be flashlights if they need to be.
Certainly. Certainly exactly right. So there you see the results of calibrating Leo's two TVs. I think I did watch some real content on them. He didn't actually have a Blu-ray player on the Pioneer.
Oh.
So I watched some cable.
There you go.
Some stuff. And it looked pretty good. I liked it. And the Blu-ray from the PS3, after I had tweaked the Panasonic for the PS3 specifically, looked great. I mean, that Goldfinger was...
That level difference, though. That was an interesting one.
It's very weird. I'm looking to investigate that. I don't know the answer. If you come up with any thoughts, let me know.
I'm going to do a little research after the show today.
Okay, good.
I'm curious. What did you run into?
Right, exactly. SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room is saying, absolute black level is only noticeable in a totally black room. Well, that's true.
100% true. And if you're not... if you're not overdriving the display as far as brightness goes, because
right.
if you don't allow your eyes to dark adjust, you'll never see that dark detail.
Right.
And the TV in a dark environment, you want to really lower it down. So, it's easier on your eyes. There's
yep.
less eye strain.
Right.
And then allows you to pick up those details and enjoy that display even more.
Right. Right. Rusty Bones is saying, what? No Blu-ray player on the Pioneer? Well, you have to understand that Leo is just now moving into this house. So when I went in there, the seating the seating for the Panasonic is three gigantic beanbag chairs.
Holy cow, that's awesome.
It's only temporary, I'm sure. He said, in fact, IKEA might be there when I was there delivering a bunch of new furniture. So, you know, he's not totally moved in yet. I'm sure he's going to put a Blu-ray player on that Pioneer.
He's setting the pad up. At least he's got the displays calibrated. Scott, you did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Kick butt. I'm glad we had a chance to take a look at what Leo's gear is and its performance characteristics.
Exactly.
That's what
I just thought that was so cool, and I'm so glad to share it with you because, you know exactly what where I'm coming from.
I want to know. And you know what? I like to look at the results of display systems I haven't tested personally because it gives me an idea. It saved me a lot of work. And
there you go.
And you tested it with good hardware, so I'm like, I'll keep those results in the back of my head when I look at other stuff.
Fantastic. Great. Well, you know what? We've come to the end of a wonderful hour. I really appreciate it. Can you believe it? It's already an hour?
That was quick.
I know. Will you come back?
Indeed.
Good.
Anytime.
Fantastic. I look forward to that very much. You can find your stuff at heronfidelity.com.
Yep. You can get a hold of me there.
Please.
And also at Revision 3.
At Revision 3, you've got
Techzilla.com and HDNation.tv.
Next week, I'm going to continue my conversation with Robert Herron. We didn't get any chance at all to talk about home theater PCs, which is something I need to learn more about. And I know, Robert, you're an expert in this category.
I love my home theater PC.
Well, I can't wait to learn more about it. So tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Robert Herron. Until then, geek out.